welcome back. It is time to check in with the Miami Dolphins and Omar Kelly from the Miami Herald, covering the Miami Dolphins like nobody's business. Omar, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you, Dave? Good to see you, my friend.
Yeah. Dave's hanging in there, man. He's hanging in there pretty well.
I'm not hanging in there. I'm doing well.
I just called him out for being the highest paid guy at the Sunset.
Not anymore. I'm not.
Hey, listen, I literally just had a conversation about you, Dave, because somebody asked me what I'm going to do in 5 years. And I thought to myself, like, hey, I got to keep reinventing myself because this industry is constantly, yours too, Joe, is constantly changing.
Oh, shrinking, man.
Constantly changing, constantly contracting. And you better figure out what it's going to take to connect with this younger audience. Otherwise, you're going to be put out the pasture. And
don't make too much money either, Omar, okay?
Yeah.
No.
I never had to have that problem yet.
Oh, man. Hey, so I got to ask you, is the guys now in camp for second-day rookies, boy, Omar, there's never been a better time since I've been here in 1980 to be a rookie or rookie free agent, one of the 13 that was drafted or a rookie free agent to come in here, not only make the team, but get a chance to play as there is right now, especially with a new GM and new head coach coming in together. They're their guys.
Yeah, I give you a perfect example. A guy like Lewis Moore, undrafted safety from Indiana, he could be the starter. I don't see any reason why he can't be the starter. That job is wide open. I can't name you anybody other than Dante Trader who could potentially or should be the front runner to be the starting safety opposite Trader. And truthfully speaking, last training camp, Trader missed all of but 1 week because of a soft tissue injury. And you just never know how training camp is going to pan out. So for him, for the DJ Campbells of the world, for even Trey Moore, those guys could be rookie starters, snap of a finger. And you know, I wasn't here when Zach Thomas won the starting job.
Jimmy. Yeah.
Yeah. I wasn't here. I think it was a former head Jack Del Rio who.
Yeah, that's right. You know,
was viewed as a progress stopper, and basically they just waved him and moved on. It can happen for anybody on this team if you go out there and make plays. I was trying to remember, there have been, you know, even the Jarvis Landry's didn't hit the floor running out the gate. Jarvis Landry had a strong camp, but he wasn't like killing it. I was thinking to myself, the last guy who was really killing it was Preston Williams, in training camp as a rookie. And truth be told, that also means nothing because look at Preston Williams' career. So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
So yeah, you're bringing up exactly what I wrote about it on my Substack column, Omar. Zach Thomas year. Jimmy got up in front of the team and said, he showed a video of Dan Marino throwing a pass. He goes, that's what we need on this team. You're the first guy to make this squad. Then he showed a video of Larry Izzo. And he said, where are you from? Houston. You have family there. Yep. Call him up. You're number two on the team. And because Larry Izzo surprised everybody in camp. Right. Okay. And now to your point, he had already cut Jack Del Rio. Jack Del Rio thought he was being called in to be named captain, and he got cut. Okay, that tells you how quickly it turns. Who's going to surprise? This team needs surprises in camp, you know, good surprises beyond the first, you know, the number one picks, Chris Johnson, Caden Proctor. Right. Who's the candidate to be the surprise?
To me, it's got to be Juju Brents. That's where we start. If I'm just stacking up players with probably the best ability, Juju Brents would definitely be in my top 10. Long, rangy, speed, good instincts, phenomenal footwork. The problem is he just cannot stay healthy. He hasn't stayed healthy his entire career. Former second-round pick, Indianapolis Colts, they got him. They cut him. a very good defensive coordinator, basically cut and moved on, signed Xavier Howard, added Xavier Howard to the team instead of Juju. But Juju came here. He took a minute to learn the defense. And then once he got on the field, he had two phenomenal games. Then he got hurt. Yeah. But that's just a very talented guy. And hopefully he can stay healthy. Hopefully they can figure out a program that can keep him healthy. I would say Jordan Phillips and Dante Trader have probably set the standard for what you expect from second-year players. And I think this is an even bigger year for second-year players than it is for the rookie class, because rookies need to learn. Rookies need to, you know, they're rookies. That there's a reason they're rookies. They don't know what they don't know. And you generally don't see a significant rookie jump until you get to right after the first exhibition game, when suddenly they're reminded, this is just football. This is a game I've been playing since I was like 10 years old. Yeah, the speed of the game is different. The talent level is different, but I can do this. And I remember there's always a rookie that's like, he gets out there exhibition game and then he's like, oh, okay, this is still football. And then he starts to really blossom in camp. So I'm looking forward to seeing a lot of the second year players, the jumps that they're going to make, because to me, they're the key to this team's success, because there was a lot poured into them last year, and hopefully it pays dividends this year.
Omar, last night, after I saw the picture in the paper of the two rookie wide receivers jogging together, one of them being Chris Bell, who's got his knee ACL from November 22nd. You know what I did last night? I actually counted months.
Of course.
And how many months? Like, okay, he's not going to be ready to start. Yeah. But okay, so he's got a camp. We got three preseason games. Now, let's give him September and October off, and could he be back? I'm just doing it unless he's a slow healer and it's worse than we thought. Be back by November if we can play doctor here a little bit. What do you think?
Absolutely. I think he's going to spend most of the half the year on NFI, and then he's going to have his window to practice opened up, and I think they've got 2 weeks. To practice, and they'll see where he is. Remember, the last guy who did this was Bradley Chubb, tore an ACL, tore two or three ligaments in his knee in November. Late November.
They decided just shut him down for the year.
No, he practiced.
Oh, you're talking about okay.
He practiced, and then he decided like, hey, this is not good enough. And that's the one thing I hate when people. Players always rush themselves back on the field, and I think that they do themselves at a disservice, because they're not going to evaluate you based on, oh, he was 70% when he was out there. No, they're evaluating you based on you being out there, and then they're going to hold it against you. And I always say, don't put yourself back out there on the field until you're completely healthy. And you always hear this from players. It started with Frank Gore back in 2004, where a player will tell you, yeah, I was back on the field, but I didn't feel like myself until that second year. I haven't met a player with a knee injury who has not said that to me. So
I just wonder, because I think they're going to be real careful with him, knowing what this year is. If he doesn't look it when he's out there running around and cutting, and obviously you're going to look at your doctor, you know, your lead doctor out there. I don't know if I'm even allowed to say doctors' names anymore, but your lead doctor out there who does all the big knees.
Dr. Uribe.
Okay, you saw. All right. You said it. By the way, that was Omar said Dr. Uribe from Baptist Health.
Don around here. He's done every important knee in South Florida. I have no doubt in my mind that you're probably going to play most of this year without Chris Bell. And let's hope that you're lucky enough where no other receiver goes down. I know that you won't, because there are two positions that always take injuries during training camp, and those are running backs and wide receivers. And you just got to hope that you're lucky, because those are the positions that run the most. And that's when all those soft tissues and all those knees and like think about where you were last training camp, where you basically lost like four cornerbacks and had to begin the season with two guys you signed off the waiver wires.
Ended up starting all year.
One of them had a really good season too. Yeah. So yeah, let's just hope, knock on wood, that they're lucky and they don't lose any of those guys, because from a depth standpoint, they got nothing at those positions already. So imagine having nothing and then starting with like two injuries there. That would be completely catastrophic for this franchise.
All right. Jordan Brooks completes the offseason contracts. And
The trilogy of offseason.
Got them done.
And they're all
– it's a great job. They got them done.
Contract. You know, we're used to the last several years, oh, so-and-so is now number one highest paid player's position, right? And now this is, you know, I think – he slots in at number five at his position.
Supposedly. Understand.
Right. We have to look at
and I warn this. I tell people all the time what's reported out about these contracts when you initially report it and nobody double checks it, nobody cross checks it, is not accurate. I promise you, I will wager a week's salary. Jordan Brooks is not making $17.2 million a year. What the deal is it's probably 4 years. It's a 3 year extension, but it's going to be $51 million over 4 years. They always skirt the math to make ignorant people not understand these contracts. And then, so it basically averages out to $12.8 million a year. $35 million is probably going to be split over, I'm guessing, the first 2 years. If it's the first 3 years, then it's a phenomenal deal. When they tell you the $35 million in guaranteed money, they didn't tell you if it was fully guaranteed. So there's probably a portion of that that's guaranteed for injury, or portion of that that's triggered on March 8th of 2027. So you always got to wait for the details. But when you looked at the details of both A'ron Brewer's deal and Devon Achane's deal, they were phenomenal. Team friendly, but players can still achieve it if they're good. But if players are injured, then the team can shake them down like they always do. So it you know, but the important thing is the deals got done and the players have some security. And that was what's important to Jordan Brooks, because whenever you're a player of that status, you cannot go into a year without some security.
Yeah.
And he's probably going to have $35 million worth of security right now, where he can go and he can do everything you need. And the biggest thing that for me is, it's always got to be the guy. If the guy is the standard bearer, the guy is the flag carrier, just like Zach Seeler was last year, Jordan Brooks is that this year. He is the standard for what they want and how they want to do it. He's the alpha male of that team. You cannot go into the year not taking care of him, because it sends a horrible message to the rest of your locker room.
I agree. That was a no-brainer for all the things. Leadership. And by the way, he does the number one thing as well as anybody. That's tackle. He had more tackles than anybody in the league last year. I am with you. And bottom line, as long as he's happy, whatever you think of the contract, as you just said at the end.
Yeah.
That's all that matters, because happy veterans are good for everybody. Young guys, it's good to see. Mm-hmm. And also it sends a nice message. Hey, man, we took our three or four of our best players from a year ago, and we kept them. Even with all this money lost, dead money, we found a way. We paid them because we think we can turn this around quickly, and we want to let you guys know that it can happen for you too. A lot of good messages.
Absolutely. And here's the thing about all this dead cap, and I know you're obsessed with the dead cap, Joe, because, you know, a lot of money is going to a lot of players who are not on this team. When you look at
nobody should be happy with that, including that monster amount of money not too far from here in a different state.
In Atlanta, and it's probably going to be having a dynamic season as a starting quarterback. You're going to be paying the starting quarterback for the Atlanta Falcons. And let's hope that Malik Willis puts up comparable numbers to Tua. I know Tua is probably going to fade in
you
December.
You think Tua is going to have a dynamic season?
I definitely think he's going to have a dynamic season.
So you're saying he'll stay healthy and we'd be worrying about here if he was here, right?
Yeah, this is going to be the typical Dolphins. You know, yeah, we let him go and look what he did over there, and you know, then compared to what that's my hope, that Malik Willis has a comparable season or a respectable season, or gives you hope. because otherwise it's going to be like, oh, do these guys know what they're doing? And yes, Tua was not really going to take this franchise anywhere, but we also know that Malik Willis probably won't take this franchise anywhere right this very minute. So he needs more time.
I don't know if they're going to be playing with the same talent offensively, to be fair.
No. They're not going to be playing with the same talent. But
so that's got to be brought up, yes.
Yeah. To your point, Joe, yes, they took a huge financial hit this year. But as I always say, outside of Tua Tagovailoa, they're not paying anybody a dime. Tua's getting his $54 million, but they're not paying anybody anything. That money has already been spent. It's just finagling the cap numbers. Steve Ross isn't writing a check right now. He's got a small, tiny, tiny little payroll. And next year, they'll have $99 million in cap space right now. And yeah. Probably a little bit more when the Jordan Brooks deal gets factored in. And then you could build whatever you feel like you want to build. And the question is, will they build it responsibly? And
we're going to find out, but we're going to have to give them some time. And it's hard right now to ask our fan base to – that last thing they want to hear right now is give them time, but we have to give them time. Tell them to take patience. Phil's like, how many do I have to take?
Yeah.
And they bring up those numbers, that 26 number and all that stuff. Anyway, hey, Omar, I got to let you run, brother. Thank you so much. I've been doing real well with the format here. So
yeah, Joe, you've been saying that for 10 years. Nobody's paying attention
to
you.
That's part of the show, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really bad. I think the big guy's in town right now. All right. Thank you, Omar.
Yeah, you are the big guy, Joe. You are the big guy.
You got that right, yeah.
No, I'm not.
I remember the days where they named the radio station after you.
I wasn't going anywhere. They didn't have to do that for 2 months. There's no reason to do that. Thank you, Omar. Appreciate it, man. Take care of yourself. We'll see you in a couple of days out there. Chris Perkins, Dolphins columnist for the Sun Sentinel. I told you we were going to get that Sun Sentinel in there.
That's not coming out of my mouth.
Hey, Perk, you don't have to be part of that. How you doing, Perk? Chris, you there?
He hung up. I wouldn't say the name of that paper, and he's boycotting us.
Hey, Perk, you there, bud?
I'm here. Can you all hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Can you hear us?
Okay.
Yeah.
I can hear you.
Hey.
All right. I got my earbuds in. I don't know if I'm talking to you through my phone or earbuds, but let's do it.
Listen, we're glad to have you. Hey, Perk, first of all, you guys been able to go out there and see the rookie stuff at all or no?
No. They don't let us out there for that. We'll see the full squad next week after the veterans report. But look, I'm looking forward to seeing both sets of players, right? The rookies and the veterans, because there's a lot to prove from both groups.
Have you ever seen anything more open from, I don't want to say 90 all the way down to the best player, but boy, it feels like it's 75 or 80 strong. They're going to have a chance to not only make the team, but you have a good camp. Hell, you might be playing a little bit on offense and defense. I've never seen anything like this group.
Yeah, no, it's wide open, Joe. It takes me back to 2019 when they had that rebuild going and you didn't really know who was going to be in what position. Now, the strange thing about this rebuild from that standpoint, a lot of these starting jobs have kind of been decided, right? We know who's going to be at left tackle, left guard. We know the starting offensive line. We don't know the starting receivers, but we know all the other starting positions. Defensively, we have a pretty good idea of who's going to start. Now, you know, that linebacking trio, we don't know who's going to get the majority of the snaps, but right now we know who's going to start. So it's going to be a lot of positions, only a few starting positions I think are going to be open, but the competition for those positions is going to be fierce. And then the competition for the backups is going to be, you know, it's just going to be wild. It's just a every man for himself thing as far as no allegiances to, you know, this administration drafted this player, so we're going to keep him. I think it's a clean slate from that standpoint.
All right, Perk, no proven receiver, edge rusher, or cornerback. Give me a surprise name at one of these positions. Who's going to step up and a month from now we'll be saying, okay, maybe this guy's the answer.
You know what? I was disappointed to see that Storm Duck is going on the PUP list, right? The physically unable to perform list. The cornerback, the self-made kid, undrafted. I believe this is his third season. But, you know, he had had that knee injury that he was recovering from. I thought Storm was going to be one of those prize people. As far as veterans, I think Juju Brents at the cornerback position is going to be somebody who emerges. He's a guy who has had injury problems, and that's always held him back, but a really good, productive player. I think Chris Johnson, the rookie, is going to be good at the slot corner, the 27th pick of this draft, the other first round pick aside from Caden Proctor. And then, you know what, but Dave and Joe, I don't see anybody emerging at edge rusher. You know, at receiver, you could see Chris Bell, maybe Caleb Douglas, the third round pick out of Texas Tech. At edge rusher, I don't see Chop emerging. I don't see Josh Uche, David Ojabo, Max Llewellyn. And that's not a knock on any of those guys. It's just where they are at that position right now. I see potential at receiver and at corner. I think edge rusher right now has flatlined.
Let's talk about the wide receiver position, because it's tied into Malik Willis and what's going to happen. And listen, he's going to need some help. I know everybody's got an opinion on Malik Willis already and what it's going to look like. And, you know, coming off whatever happened, if you like the way he played, some people like the way he played this offseason and some didn't in his practices and OTAs and mini camps. But you got to have some guys get some separation out there. If I was to tell you that Tolbert, Washington, and Atwell would be your starters, could you see that? And when you go three wide, would that be your first three as from what you've seen so far?
That would probably be my first three, yeah, but look, I'm not sure they're going to get that so-called wide receiver one this season. I think this is going to be a multi-year project. And look, when you don't sign Tyreek Hill and you trade Jaylen Waddle, there's going to be a come down from that, right? So that's what they're going to experience here. And, I'm with a lot of people. I'm a big Chris Bell fan. I think this guy could be the steal of the draft, not for the Dolphins, for the whole league. If he recovers from that knee injury, he's a guy who I compare him to Chris Chambers, just a big, solid, physical receiver with a lot of skills. He could really be good, but as far as these other receivers, I just don't see a whole lot. I think Devon Achane could be your leading receiver. Greg Dulcich could be number two. But I will say this, Joe, and you know, I've said this on another podcast that I do, The Fish Tank with Seth Levitt, the Dolphins' former media relations guy, and O.J. McDuffie. You know, when you look at that ESPN top 10 quarterback list, the last two Super Bowl winners, Sam Darnold and Jalen Hurts, were honorable mention. They weren't in the top 10. And so I think that's kind of what I want from Malik Willis, is him to be the guy who makes those timely plays, but isn't necessarily considered a top quarterback. But by the system that you play, the way Seattle did it, the way Philly did it, you can still win a Super Bowl. So I'm not necessarily looking for Malik to be Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson. To me, you know, be Sam Darnold or Jalen Hurts and be in a good system and you can still make it work. To me, that fits in with the receiver problem also, that the receivers fit into kind of a greater thing. You don't need another Tyreek Hill. You know, you need somebody who can fit the system, meaning you've got a good defense, you've got a good run game, you've got an adequate passing game to good passing game, and good play from the quarterback. You don't need Hall of Famers at every single position. Get a good system and good players.
Perk, do we get more out of these 13 guys in this draft or the eight from the draft before, the year before, who all played a lot of football last year?
Man, I like that draft class from 2025. The problem is, and I've heard Dave Hyde say this about the defensive players, I don't know that there's a specialized thing that many of them have from last year. So, you know, you look at those defensive tackles, and you do have some talent among Kenneth Grant and Jordan Phillips and Zeke Biggers. But do you have somebody who can really rush the passer from the inside, somebody who can really shut down the run? I think they're all still developing. So I think you have more potential from that 2025 draft class than this year, but I need to see these guys specialize in some things. You guys know I love Jordan Phillips and Dante Trader. I think those guys are going to be really, really good players for the Dolphins. The others in 2025, we could see some contributions. This year's draft class, Proctor, I'm still thinking I probably would have taken Reuben Bain over him, but we'll see how that turns out. The rest of the draft class, I'm very wait and see. I like the talent at linebacker. I like the talent at receiver that they got. I like Chris Johnson, but I'm very wait and see on all of those guys. Last year's draft class, they got on the field. They did some decent things. So I'm more optimistic about last year's class.
Let me just follow this up. Perk, we got 13 guys we drafted. There better be 5 or 6 guys playing right away. And I'm not saying they have to start as in the first play of the game, but their ass better be rotating in our offense or defense. I mean, you can't have 13 guys in a draft class with the lack of skill set and production. Nobody's done anything. They better be playing a lot of those 13 guys, or why do we have all those picks? And I mean early on. You agree with that or no?
Yeah. I agree with that. They've got to play, which I just don't know which ones have star potential. Look, Proctor and Johnson better have star potential.
Right off the bat.
They were the 2 first-round picks. Right, they better. I'm not convinced that they will. Jacob Rodriguez and Trey Moore and Kyle Lewis, I think, are going to be good rotational players. Those are the 3 linebackers that they drafted. What roles are they going to have? I don't know. So that's kind of why I want to see how this draft class shakes out. I think that they got good talent, but I don't know what these guys can necessarily do. I don't know who the pass rusher is out of this draft class. Maybe it's Trey Moore, the linebacker. Maybe it's Max Llewellyn, the 7th round pick. But I just don't really know the roles for these guys at this point. Caleb Douglas, the 3rd round wide receiver, he's good. I think Chris Bell is definitely potentially better. But so I need to see how these guys are going to contribute. But I agree with you. They need to get in there and play 100%. That would be a huge disappointment if they didn't have 5 or 6 of these guys regularly in the rotation.
All right, Perk, you don't draft Jacob Rodriguez high in the 2nd round to sit on the bench.
Play special teams.
Yeah, in order to play special. And you don't, obviously, don't sign Jordan Brooks. He's not going to sit. Which leaves Tyrell Dotson. What is going to be, I assume he's going, he started his career special teams. He might end there or a trade. Not that you'll get a lot, but you need a lot. So maybe you swap him for a cornerback or something. What's going to happen here at linebacker?
We have to wait and see, Dave, because I think joint practices are going to be a big measuring stick, and then the post-training camp cuts are going to be a big opportunity. So if you get in joint practices and you see Tyrell Dotson can't do what you need him to do, or you see one of the youngsters does it better, then, yeah, he becomes a trade candidate. But I don't think you see that until after the joint practices, and I don't think you get the real opportunity to pick up the talent until after the training camp cuts come. So it could be that he just, or not even Dotson, anybody, any veteran, just plays a lower role until you see, what you can get for him, what's going to happen there at that position. But, really, I think at linebacker, that's going to be an interesting thing with the Jeff Hafley defense, because I think this team is going to do a lot of situational substitutions as opposed to that. Just leave them out there. Big tight end, Kyle Lewis defends them. Pass rush situation, Trey Moore. First down run stopper, maybe that's Dotson. Maybe if you need an all around, maybe that's Jacob Rodriguez. So, I, again, the roles, I don't know what these youngsters specialize in, but I think they're going to play. And I think that the Hafley defense, I'm really excited to see it, because I think it's going to be very situational, which,
yes,
let's face it, football is situational.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one. There are going to be a lot of guys playing in different packages and different downs and situations.
Right.
Hey, you're a little slow mentioning our 4th pick. You just mentioned him late here, Caleb Douglas, 1st, 3rd round pick of the 3. We don't talk about him much. He's 6'4". He's a big guy that can run fast. We know that. Yep. That's a good start. But I know we didn't get to see a lot out there, but they got to be counting on this guy just by where he was picked, that he's going to get every opportunity to be rotating in there, isn't he? Right in the start of September.
100%.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what? Malik Willis really likes him. Malik told us that at either minicamp or OTAs, he was like, he's a long guy, Caleb Douglas, and it kind of looks like he's not running fast, but that dude covers a lot of ground. So you know, and I after Malik said that, I started looking at Caleb, and I was like, you know what? He's kind of right about that. So that is something that Caleb does very well. He covers a lot of ground. So let's see what other distinguishing skills that he can establish in training camp that can get him out there on the field. But while he's not fast, he does cover a lot of ground, and that can be very beneficial. So let's see how Malik is able to use that. Let's see how Caleb Douglas is able to harness that and get an edge on defensive backs. But that was one of those real intangibles that Malik pointed out about Caleb that I hadn't spotted.
All right, over-under wins this year, 4.5. You're going into camp. Where are you with this team?
All right, you know, my big thing is the most important thing out of this season to come out, you got to know that Sully is the right GM, that Half is the right head coach, that Malik is the right quarterback. That is your number one objective for the season. After that, win 5 games. That's what Flo did in 2019, right? After that horrible start, 0-7, those first 3 games, they lost. I think the combined score was 133-16. They got crushed.
Yeah.
And people are, oh, they're only going to win 1 game. No, they, you know, Flo got them in line. So bad team. I think 5 wins is kind of the standard, but it's not about wins. It's making sure you selected the right GM, the right head coach, and the right quarterback.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Because I know you've been getting hit with everything like everybody else. Like, how many games? Everybody just wants to go, how many games are we going to win, right? You're getting a lot of that. And nobody's like, hey, you understand everything here. This is not a normal year, man. It's a year to clean up all the trash.
It's a year about the future. It's a year about the rebuild. Did we put the right people in place at the top? And then you can proceed. That right? Didn't New England do that? They go from 4 wins, but they knew they had their head coach. They knew they had their quarterback. They knew they had their GM. You know, these things are done very quickly nowadays if you have the right people. Look at Jacksonville with Liam Cohen and with the 35-year-old GM. Is it James Gladstone? If you have the right people at the top, you know, Jacksonville won 13 games last year. You can get things moving. So to me, that's the number one objective for the Dolphins. Make sure you have the right people at the top. If you don't, I'm not sure you can call this season a success.
Burke, thank you, man. Really appreciate you getting up with us early. How's everything else going? Was the social life good in the offseason? You all right, right?
We just got to get an update here.
Yeah, now social life is good, man. I got no complaints there. I was supposed to, I told y'all I was supposed to be going to Madrid, but that didn't work out. But I went to Costa Rica earlier in the spring, and that was good. It was the same friend with benefits. So, you know, I'm good. Life is good.
Costa Rica.
Internationally.
Costa Rica, you didn't have to take anybody, man. That's a slam dunk over there, man. I got my cousin. Go ahead.
I went to the quiet part, the part with all the resorts and retreats and all that. Place where people go for these the hot yoga and all that. I was on the tame side. Yeah.
Okay. I got my cousin, man. My cousin back home, he walked in and said, "Hey, I'm getting divorced," and told her I'm done, and wasn't happy, and he was getting ready to retire, and he went to Costa Rica.
And he never came back?
And we can't find him now. We know he's got his golf clubs. And
did you see him over there, Perk?
He got a place, man.
Somebody looks like Joe Rose.
Well, I'll tell you what. We can't even get him to come back to the United States. It's so good over there, man. It's crazy. Perk, thank you, brother. Appreciate it.
All right, we'll talk.
All right. Chris Perkins joining us this morning. A little bit. Really haven't taken that angle. Like, first year is about the QB, the head coach, and the GM.
Well, we've talked about the QB, right?
I got news for you.
You want to come out of this saying
GM and head coach need more than 1 year.
It's going to be a hard one to judge. Now, to Perks, what he was saying was, look, Brian Flores held it together, right? And that was
he went 5-4 in his last 9.
Yeah, that was a question with that roster and that team. And all the he was saying we're not tanking, and the front office was saying we're tanking. I mean, so
Brian Flores' last game. Do you remember his last game that year?
New England.
They went in there and beat Brady on the last second in the end zone through a touchdown pass.
I remember Ryan Fitzpatrick carrying Devontae Parker off the field, or it was the other way around. I can't remember which one was carrying. And I also remember standing in that New England locker room afterwards. And
they were playing for something.
And Steve Ross and his contingent were on the other side of the locker room, and they looked just been to a funeral.
Yeah.
Because they said, what was this year about? Yeah. We were trying to get the number one pick, and we have the fifth pick overall.
Right. So, 4 wins.
Yeah.
Fifth pick. Host of Locked On Fins and A to Z Sports NFL analyst joins us. Kyle, good morning. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing great. Back to school today, huh?
Yeah. Back to school. But I got to tell you, man, I can never remember in all my years since getting drafted here, and I've been here since 1980, never remember a better opportunity in every scenario possible for a draft class and rookie free agents, 24, 25, of the whole group there, of having a great opportunity to make the 53-man roster as this group has, considering what has happened to this team in the last 6 or 7 months.
Well, absolutely. It's wide open. You know, there's you look at a handful of positions and a handful of names that have either, you know, holdovers from the last regime that were high draft picks, and even those guys, you know, I think there's less guaranteed to them than the guys that got a big vote of confidence with a new contract. And I think Malik Willis, Aaron Brewer, Devon Achane, like those big contracts, yeah, those guys are kind of the keystones of what you're building with, but everything else is, you know, the guys in this draft class, probably they're going to want to see him play because they pick them with their yep. vision for what they want this to look like. And that's going to provide them with a lot of opportunity, but nothing's guaranteed. You know, these guys probably have some edges if they were brought in by this staff as compared to holdovers for a lot of those spots. But it's going to be an exciting stretch for figuring out what this is going to look like because there's so many spots, Joe, that it's you yeah. could look and say, hey, there's
I have no idea.
That can see playing.
Yeah, I agree. In some cases, we got guys with zero experience playing against guys with zero experience. I mean, like, oh, you played a little bit on special teams. I haven't played at all. Yeah, it's kind of a crazy one. So I want to get into this one last time with you, and I swear I'm done. And there's going to be articles, and again, our guys got to do articles and fill out till, you know, we get into camp, and then there'll be a lot of great stories on different positions and competitions and everything else. In my opinion, this team got to try to win. That 2019 thing should never, ever happen again. Going back to what happened and what we won, went 5-4 in the last 9 games that year, and with the whole thing with Brian Flores, and you know, everybody was mad. We didn't either. We should have sucked, and we started 0-7. We're on our way to getting the first. I hate that. I don't like it. It didn't work then, and in my opinion, it didn't work because you don't get the right guys anyway. You try to win, you develop, and you play your best players, right? You want learned guys to compete and try to win every game. Are you on that, or are you already thinking about a quarterback or wide receiver for next year?
No, I'm not thinking about any of that because you look at the prize from that year's draft class, Joe Burrow, Bengals have missed the playoffs the last 3 seasons. So as good as Joe Burrow is, if you don't build the whole thing right, regardless,
yeah,
it doesn't matter. So I think that's the biggest thing, and how many times we got to look up and down the hierarchy of the best quarterbacks in the NFL and how many of them were drafted first overall versus a team that made the playoffs in Kansas City that trades up. Buffalo, you know, gets Josh Allen at 7th overall. Lamar Jackson goes at 32 overall. There's all these examples where if you're just focused on building a very strong, fundamentally sound core of your football operation, a lot of these problems are going to take care of themselves. And that's what I'm worried about. And you can find good players every single year. You can find good quarterbacks that aren't the first quarterback taken because so much of that is about the fit with the player and the system and the talent around him as much as it is, hey, is this guy physically gifted enough and how well does he read coverages when he comes into the league? Because with the right guy, with the right coaches around him, that stuff can grow and develop. And we just unfortunately haven't seen that take place in South Florida in a while. So that's, I think, where yeah. a lot of the eagerness is that, hey, we got to get the first pick because it's can't miss. Well, not necessarily.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you. Hey, the other part of this, I got asked this yesterday. John Eric Sullivan and Jeff Hafley, your general manager and head coach, you got to give them some time on this. I mean, I think we've done a good job trying to educate everybody on what has happened here and this disaster that we're trying to clean up right now. Those guys are going to need some time on this, right? We can't, after year one, we got to get rid of this guy. No, he couldn't coach. I knew he couldn't. They're going to need some time. And by the way, when you haven't been in the playoffs in 26 years, it's hard to ask a fan base to be patient.
Yeah, you cannot ask Jeff Hafley and John Eric Sullivan to pay for the sins of Cam Cameron and Nick Saban and Tony Sparano and Adam Gase and who am I forgetting there?
I don't know. You're on a roll there, man. You're covering 26 years. Man, that was good. You covered 26 years.
Yeah, Dennis Hickey, Mike Tannenbaum, like the list goes on and on. Right? This has to be square one with these guys. And I think everybody has an understanding. 60% of your salary cap allotment is the players no longer on the team. You're trying to compete and build this thing up, but you are exceptionally limited to a degree in which we've almost never seen in the NFL before. So it's a very unique set of circumstances. Yeah.
I've never seen anything like this with this team.
It's important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to ask you, Malik Willis, you know, somebody had an article, and you see all these articles. Oh, he's a one and done here, and he won't work out, and we'll get a new guy next year and all this stuff. What does Malik Willis need to do, considering what he has around him? He has potentially a good offensive line if everything goes right. I think it could be improved. Especially with a first-round pick in there. But for you, Malik Willis, does he have enough to show that he can be the quarterback of the future?
I certainly think you can evaluate a player in a vacuum. It's just harder if you have all of the questions around the cast that maybe we do with the passing game. But somebody's going to step up and catch a football and have chemistry with him. Right? And
yes, I agree with
Greg
that.
Greg Dulcich or Malik Washington or one of the rookies or Jalen Tolbert, whoever it is, there's going to be a guy that probably puts up 750 receiving yards that's never put that kind of number up before. There's probably going to be somebody else that's putting up 650 yards that never put that kind of number up before. The volume is probably going to get you to respectable numbers for some guys, and that's a whole other separate conversation about, well, did he do that because of the situation or because of his talent level? For Malik, control what you can control, make good decisions with the football, protect yourself when you run, but we want you to use your legs and let that be a weapon and part of your game. Stay healthy all season, and let the natural physical ability that he has show. And if he's able to protect the football, not make unforced errors, orchestrate the offense, stay healthy. I think that's all you can ask of him. And based on how they've talked about him, I think that would be considered really strong progress in trying to build around him. But again, you know, if they end up with a very high draft pick and all those things happen and they fall in love with a quarterback, I wouldn't blame them if they did draft a quarterback because Malik is on a 3-year deal with 2 years of guaranteed salary. So you give that goes back to that whole talking point about competition in the quarterback room and, wow, they didn't do it this year because they didn't draft anybody. Like, I think that's probably a multi-year process to get to that point. So I would say anything and everything is on the table, but the best you can ask for Malik Willis is you don't put the ball in harm's way. You are clean with your operation of the offense. You're a good leader. And the dual threat and physical ability that you have shows up every single week.
Yeah.
If those things happen, that's what I'm hoping for Malik Willis.
Everybody's been talking about Dolphins don't have a one or a two, a number one receiver or a number two receiver. If that's the case, how difficult is it going to be? Because, listen, we kind of know what ones and twos look like. We just had it for a little while, what a top-notch number one looks like and a top-notch number two in Waddle.
Yeah, I think what that looks like is more pure progression-based passing. You know, there's that, and that's part of the evaluation for Malik Willis. If you don't have a number one that you're going to automatically set as your number one primary and the first read in all of your progressions, well, you take your snap and you diagnose the shift in the shell of the defense and you say, okay, I think they're playing this coverage based on this movement. Is the primary in theory going to be there? Yes or no? If the answer is yes, you throw the ball. If the answer is no, you work, and eventually you'll find space, whether that's a whole bunch of checkdowns to stay on schedule, which might be a boring way to play football, but you can only cover so much grass on defense if you're playing zone coverage. So that's where, and I don't think you're going to get a lot of man, You might get it some weeks, depending on what the team has from a pass rush perspective, but you don't want to play a lot of man coverage against Malik Willis and have all these guys in the back seven turning their back to the quarterback.
I agree.
So I think you'll see pure progression based, and I think it'll be very even as far as the distribution of the football if you don't have a guy. And I don't think having a guy that has to get 170 targets every single year is the worst thing in the world, as long as you are able to operate the progressions of the offense as the quarterback.
Are you worried about I'm bouncing on you here early because we've still got a week before the veterans get to camp here. Are you worried about pass rush overall and those numbers looking as far as sacks and hits on the quarterback and pressures not being there? Or can they get creative enough to cover up for it if they don't have pure talent at those positions, especially on the outside?
I think there's a few spots that are going to be really important to determining that, because we do want to be – we've heard Jeff Hafley talk about how we do want to be multiple with our fronts. We want to present a bunch of different things, force quarterbacks to process after the snap. I think you have to – have somebody that blurs the lines between whether you are in a 3-4 or a 4-3 under, you know, from a structure standpoint, as far as who are we blocking, who's actually coming, who are the threats. That's where I think Jeff Hafley's scheme ability is going to have to show up a little bit for Miami, because I don't necessarily look at this group. Now, if you tell me we're in 3rd and 12 and we got speedy, twitchy guys like Chop Robinson and Josh Uche on the edge, like, I think that's a great situation. That's the best situation for those guys based off what they've shown as NFL players. And I think the defensive tackles will be a year better because three of the four top guys are all second-year players this year. So if you can get into those really advantageous situations, I think they're physically capable of being very disruptive. But as far as your 1st and 10 stuff, your 3rd and 6 when you got to be kept a little bit more modest, that's where I think some of that weight, I think, is going to have to shift to Jeff Hafley this season.
Yeah, it's this whole thing is going to be fun to watch. And as I said, it just looks so open at so many different positions. Jacob Rodriguez and Dotson. Dotson, by the way, is kind of the guy we talk so much about. Jordan Brooks. We don't talk. I thought Dotson was really good. I know he missed a little bit of time, not much, but a little bit. Missed a game or two. But, boy, together, those guys had a ton of tackles. And Dotson's a vocal one. He's the one that screams out what's going on, and he gets after it. They drafted the best guy, Jacob Rodriguez, a really good player. How do they how we get playing time for everybody to keep everybody happy back there?
I don't know that you do. I think that's one of the challenges with the depth chart, where you look at – all these positions and you're like, we have unproven players for depth. We don't know what the ceiling is of the starters. You look at the linebackers, that room's looking really nice
now.
Yeah. And I don't envy trying to sort out between Jacob Rodriguez, who you just know they want to get on the field, and what Tyrell Dotson was last year. But I think those two guys probably are going to be competing for playing time throughout camp. And it's a matter of how quickly Jacob Rodriguez picks up some of the vocal stuff, or alternatively, you know, do they find somebody else to wear the green dot, whether that's Jordan Brooks?
Yeah.
Is that one of the safeties, or they put it a little bit further back? Like, if that happens, I think that even more opens the door for Jacob to seize playing time early. And that goes back to the first thing we talked about. Guys that were brought in from this regime, I mean, Tyrell Dotson, I think, is a sufficient level starting linebacker in the NFL. If you took all the linebackers across the league and put him in a bucket, if you told me he was a starter, I'd be like, okay, like,
yeah,
you know,
he's
got things that he can work with, and he's got strengths that we can use to help us be a better defense.
Dulcet.
This group brought him in. This group brought in Jacob Rodriguez. So I think if all things were equal, they would want to see Jacob play, because he's not in a contract year and a veteran. He's a rookie on a rookie contract.
I'll leave you with this one. Just from what you've seen, every time I'm out there, he caught a zillion footballs. Greg Dulcich. And when a quarterback, by the way, likes to throw to you, they throw to you. No matter what goes on, they're going to be looking as you get in 11-on-11 and 7-on-7 because they trust you. I think Greg Dulcich is going to have a big – I'm not saying 1,000 yards, but I can see him 70-plus catches. How about you?
I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think he's got a great chance to be the leading receiver on the team this year. Every time I I see Malik on social, and he's posting the clips, or his quarterback coach, his private quarterback's coach, Sean McAvoy, is posting clips on social media of their workout sessions. You know who's always there? Greg Dulcich.
Smart.
Like they're getting a lot of reps.
Yeah.
So they had chemistry in the spring. They've been continuing to work together in the summer. Greg was, I think, excellent in the back half of the season last year with what the offense was. I think he's my leader in the clubhouse for who ends up being the leading receiver on this football team.
That's a good way to leave it. That's a good teaser for the week. Next time we talk, we'll be talking about the veterans. Kyle, thank you so much, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Jill. I'll see you next week. I'm coming down on Tuesday.
Oh, great, great. We got to go back out. What's the restaurant we eat at for breakfast? Love that place. I've been there without you, man. What was the name of that place again?
Cracker Barrel.
Damn, I can never remember the name. Damn, I love that place.
It's that country boy breakfast for like $12.
Oh, my God.
More food than you can eat.
So good, man. All right, that's a good way to end it. Now I'm hungry, too. Thank you, Kyle.
Sorry.
Kyle Krabs, host of Locked On Fins and A to Z Sports NFL Analyst. I can never remember the friggin' name Cracker Barrel, man. I was living at it, man, when my daughter was going to up in Gainesville. Hey, so we were talking about the Miami Dolphins and John Eric Sullivan a little bit, general manager of the Miami Dolphins. First draft and now 13 draft picks, a large draft class where a lot of those guys, this draft can't just be about your two number one picks, your second round pick, Jacob Rodriguez. You got three threes you got to get something out of. Really, we haven't talked much about any of the three ones. We're not going to know anything about if this year in the second half in Chris Bell, the wide receiver out of Louisville, but they got a lot of other draft picks after those first three round picks. Third round pick. So, Dave, they got hit on these guys.
For them to set the course of this new regime and to get where they want eventually, this has to be the best draft class in 30 years. And that sounds like, oh, my God, what a
big
statement.
Well, you're not saying all 13. Nobody's going 13 for 13.
No, but they've had some bad drafts over the last 30 years. They've only had a couple where you'd say that's a good draft.
We've had some bad drafts.
And you throw in the size of this. They haven't had 13 in a draft class since Jimmy in 1997 when they drafted Yetiel Green, Sam Madison, and Jason Taylor. And, you know, Yetiel Green got hurt.
I was there the day he was running a takeoff down the middle of the field and was actually having a really good camp. He was a talented guy, but he was hurt a lot. And that was it. He destroyed his knee.
Yeah, but then you got a perennial Pro Bowl cornerback and a Hall of Famer. So that makes up for it when you got two guys that good. So other than that, Joe, think back on these drafts. We talked about this a little yesterday.
I did. I said Chris Greer's one of his first draft classes. I'm always fair in this show for people that I blast a lot. Laramie Tunsil, first-round pick. He's a good player. Listen, we got rid of him, but he was really good. He's still one of the best left tackles in football.
That was one of those fortunate things in the draft, right? I mean,
it doesn't matter.
I get it.
You can't say that he
was supposed to go like first, second, third overall, and then the video came out
with the mask,
and the Dolphins took advantage of you know all the confusion over
right.
that.
Yeah, somebody that was mad at him in his life, I think it was somebody his mom was dating or somebody. It was a crazy story. Let me continue on, though, besides Tunsil, still really good and one of the highest paid tackles in football. Xavien Howard, second-round pick.
Great pick.
One of the great second-round picks in the history of this franchise. Kenyon Drake was third-round pick and really good. A little temperamental at times, but had talent and is involved in one of the greatest
plays.
Miami
Miracle.
Had the end. Matter of fact, he signed seven or eight pictures for me. I had them signed. I'd gotten them and sent them to him, and he sent them back. So, and Jakeem Grant was also in there, who ended up being a nice six-round pick. Omar went after him a lot, but he and Omar, I thought, were going to have
He's a Pro Bowl special teams player one year. So
can fly. And he had a little bit of success as a receiver. Yeah. So that's kind of – I think that was a 4-for-8 draft.
But that's the best the Dolphins have done in 30 years. That 2016 draft.
So we loaded up for a couple of those drafts during the rough times. We had three first round picks 1 year, not too many years ago, and honestly, we didn't get enough out of that. And I think we had two second round picks that year as well. and you're thinking, wow, you got to hit on these five picks. You've got to hit on these five picks. And we didn't. We didn't hit on them. When and you move up to get one of those second-round picks, and you just look back, and then some of them got hurt. It's not their fault. Some of them got injured. Some we just flat out took the wrong guy. Took the wrong guy. And you know what gets me is so I am aware of some of the history and behind-the-scenes stuff that I've not been allowed to use through the years. And it's really even more frustrating than our fan base thinks it is sometimes when you hear things and you're like amateur hour for some of these things. But now we got a fresh start. And I don't know, man. We keep saying this. Is it doable to have a better draft? And somebody says, oh, you put too much and – You realize you can't hit on every pick, and I go, I understand, but we're not getting enough out of where guys are drafted. We don't ever have a guy that's a fifth round pick. I mean, we've had some, so we know what they look like through the years, the history of the franchise.
Well, Zach Thomas was a fifth round pick.
The great one.
I mean, there are some good.
We had a safety that played here for a long time that was really good.
Jeremiah Bell, seventh
round pick. Jeremiah Bell is a really good pick with the leg and just he was a fantastic story,
but
tackling machine.
But like 2020 draft became the defining point of this pass regime that didn't work out. The Tua draft, the Noah Igbinoghene and Austin Jackson in the first round. This draft will define, really, will go a long way towards defining who these guys are.
You know, Austin's an interesting one because he's still here and he got a second contract. But he did start at left tackle and it didn't work out.
And then he played guard.
And they tried him inside. And then he got in the right system where he does – and give Mike credit. Give Mike McDaniel credit.
No.
Mike fell into the system. He goes, we're not – that's one thing, again, I said this about Mike yesterday. And I'm not saying I want Mike to be the head coach. And I was over it. But it was a good read on things that he does best that we could make him do a really good, solid right tackle when he's healthy.
Yeah, he's
now we got that problem.
Which he hasn't been the last 2 years.
No, so, that's been a problem.
Which is why he's on a 1 year contract now. But the point is, if he can stay healthy, he'd be an average tackle, which he would take. But you know, with all the high picks they had this year, you need to look back and say that this was a nice draft.
Well, it doesn't do any good to have 13 picks and go, wow, we hit on three of them. Three been really good, and one's a special teams guy. Four of 13 guys, we're in great shape. You're going no. No. We need if we're going to catch up to the rest of the NFL, we can't just keep this rotation. And by the way, I just think there for a while we lost our confidence of drafting because we weren't very good at it. So we started trading picks for guys to come in that were high maintenance.
Do you realize they have in 2022 and 23 they had four picks each, so they had eight picks, whereas that's they have 13 this past year.
Yeah.
So this is.
This is the way you got to do it, though.
Yeah, no. Well, the way they're going,
you can't do it through trading for everybody's disgruntled former player that's really talented.
I agree with you, but every new regime when they come in here says we're going to build through the draft, right?
They do.
Every single one, and then they draft and they go, yeah, maybe we're not going to build through the draft anymore. We'll try something else.
Well, you start feeling pressure as a GM, and you go, wow, I missed on this guy, missed on that guy, so now. Should have starting corners. I drafted high. Yeah, I got a couple offensive linemen. Oh, shoot, that didn't work out. We got to bring a guy in. Bring him through free agency. Trade for a guy. Trade him. And that's what we did. And that's what we did. But the fundamental way, financially responsible way to do it, and these guys come from one of the poster childs of that belief, the Green Bay way. So whatever you think of the Green Bay way, and I got, oh, what have they won? Well, I'll tell you what, they've won a lot of games, a lot more games than we have through the years. But let me just say, the draft, hey, they were big on drafting and weren't big free agents. The knock on them was, hey, you never go through free agency unless they get the right guy. Now, they went out and got one of the best players in football from the Dallas Cowboys. But they know how it needs to be done. These guys have both been through that. I think we need that.
Well, here's the Green Bay.
How many do you need to be healthy? How many of those guys, 13? I mean, we need to hit on one of those wide receivers. Got to be a big-time player.
No, the best wide receiver on the team is hurt.
That's okay. I mean,
and that's fine. They draft him. They got a bargain on him. Yeah. You know, he was discount because he was hurt. And
right. And
if he misses this year or comes back late in the year, that's fine. But we're talking the Green Bay way. Here's how it makes sense for the Dolphins. John Schneider, Seattle, the GM, grew up in the Green Bay way. Elliot Wolf of the New England Patriots, the GM, grew up in the Green Bay way. In fact, he's Ron Wolf's son. They were the Super Bowl teams this year because they built the organizationally the Green Bay way. Yeah. So that's the model for the Dolphins to now. You can overdo the Green Bay way. They won one Super Bowl with Brett Favre, and they won one Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers.
That's true.
Whereas Tom Brady won six in New England. So, I mean, there are limits of praise for the Green Bay way, I think. But
they've still done a lot more
winning than
we have.
And the best thing about what the Dolphins did this year, we've talked about this, is they went out and they said, we're going to prioritize the general manager. Whoever's picking the personnel, he's the guy we're going to get first and let him build his organization.
Well, that was the best thing. You're right. You just hit number one. We can't go, okay, you're the GM, but you got to keep this guy, that guy, that guy, this guy. And can you get a little more out of this quarterback because you're going to have him? No, they did it the right way. You're right. Can't have.
He rebuilt the front office. I think it's 10 out of 19 people in the front office are new.
But he gave everybody a chance. Of course, during that time, your hands were tied a little bit. So he goes, let me sit back. I'm going to oversee these guys and see what I like and I don't like. And so anyway, we'll have more on that coming up here. But before we do.